Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
All right. Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Souther, what's going on, man?
Not too much. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
It's freezing out.
It's still kind of cold, man. We got to get past this.
Yeah.
It's not cool, man.
It's cold.
Yeah.
We need to get past winter.
Hey, man, I was just thinking about the last episode we did, like a couple weeks ago, and we were having that pale ale from Burlington, Vermont. And
yeah, the guys from Archives.
Yeah. What a cool group of people, and also just like vibe that goes on up there, you know.
I'm still reeling over the. Remember, I was very caught up in the notion of the cost of just having a dude whose job was just to maintain
full time maintenance for
maintain
video
the
games.
Video and arcade games. Like that's a whole other cost I've never had to worry about. Well, and have a warehouse to store the ones that aren't on the floor.
Yeah,
but that's a lot of money.
That's
but it's Vermont. It's probably like $1 a foot up there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But yeah, great people, cool concept, and they brought us a really cool beer. So,
yeah.
Right. They win.
Sour beer. Sour beer from Vermont, made just for them, right?
What's going on with the new spot with Honeybee?
Honeybee is coming along. We're the vibe in the space is, like a honky-tonk poker room. We just installed these cool ceiling fans that have they look antique. They're not, but they have it's one fan that has a belt.
I love the belt
that
drive,
runs two
man.
More. Yeah, so we got two sets of those. One that runs lengthwise of this place, and one that runs over the bar.
It always reminds me
beautiful.
Of like a bunch of the spots in New Orleans, you know, and uh-huh. then like also
well,
like,
in the South, like where I grew up. Like yeah. it's such a because every damn room in your house is going to have a ceiling fan.
Yeah,
you may as well,
and sometimes the front porch too.
Hell yeah, I had them on my yeah. front. I had two on my front porch.
Yeah,
yeah, and if you can tie them together, so it's one piece, one. Piece of equipment that
I also like the
one
sound
draw of
it,
electricity.
You know?
Yeah, they just look nice.
It's like a lazy fan kind yeah. of vibe, but it's like it's
just
got a cool
move,
sound
just
to
moving
it.
Moving the air a little. It's not really supposed to.
I get anxious when it's too quiet, you know.
Yeah. Oh man. So of course. So we got two sets of those in there. We're just installing the tin ceiling, which is a beautiful contrast to the space. You know, the space is really dark wood. The ceilings are shiny tin.
It's gonna be like one of those spots where like you order whiskey and. Leave the bottle.
You know, I've considered that. You know, there was a bar that I used to go to in Williamsburg that did that. They brought out the bottle, and before they poured anything for you, because it wouldn't always be a new bottle, but before they poured anything for you, they had a ruler, and they would stand the ruler next to the bottle, and they'd write the number down, and then whenever you gave it back, they'd bring the ruler over again, and then you paid by the inch.
Liquor by the inch, yeah.
Man, I think that's a fun idea. I think it's dangerous, but I think it's fun.
Well, I was at Jack Rose a couple weeks ago in D.C., and they, you know, like every time they, you know, obviously they have a huge spirit collection and a lot of whiskey. It's a lot, you know, whiskey kind of focused. And
Jack Rose.
Every table.
That seems odd, isn't the Jack Rose an apple brandy cocktail?
Well, yeah, but they're like really into whiskey. So,
all right. Fine.
I didn't invent it. Don't chastise.
Listen.
But the thing that was cool is like I was like sitting there at the bar and I was looking around and like everyone had like a bottle of whiskey in front of them.
It's a good
like,
look.
The people next to me had like Four Roses single barrel, and I looked down, there was like Willett Reserve, and then I turned around and I look at the tables and everyone had a whiskey bottle, and it's like a hospitable thing to do, like whenever you're making a drink for someone, you put the bottles in front of them and like so they can see like what you're putting into the drink, and or if they order a whiskey, you put the bottle of whiskey in front of them so they can look at the bottle. It's a good thing to do. Yeah. You know, and I was like, wait a minute, this isn't too far off from. The only difference here is that the cork is in the bottle,
right?
And you're not pouring it for yourself. But it's not too far off from the same concept of like that old school. Like,
I mean, that's the way we try and do it at Amore as well. When someone orders an Amaro that they've never had, we pour for them. We leave the bottle sitting in front of them if we can, you know, space and the room allowing. Like when we're at high speed, it's pretty hard for us to do.
Yeah,
because often we need those bottles.
Yeah,
they want a bottle sitting in front of them. I let it sit there for a second. I'm like, here, take a picture, you know, because I'm gonna need this in a sec.
Yeah, exactly.
But I love that. I love that. And we're looking at doing some cool things like that at Honeybee. We're gonna do what we're calling the double barrel Manhattan. which is going to use two different American whiskeys to make a Manhattan. And then, so that's two barrels, right, that they came out of. And then we're going to have them behind the bar in two barrels where we're going to draw from one at a time. And when that one's half empty, we move over half and then refill with new. So I hate to use the word Solera because it's only two barrels, but it's a two-barrel system like that. So there's our double barrel Manhattan. We've already started it.
Hey, in the place. I like things that come in twos. I'm a twin and a Gemini, so you know, I'm cool with that.
Creepy.
Don't apologize.
This is creepy.
Whatever. Shut the fuck up. Yes. Hey, so like, but going into the spring for an opening, like,
yeah.
And being like kind of like a saloony whiskey kind of like, assuming that you'd be like more like whiskey kind of focused, like saloon style. But like going in the spring, like, are you gonna have like some like how are you gonna navigate that? Are you gonna have like some vodka cocktails,
you know, I don't often quote Jeff Bell, but I'm about to, strangely. How odd. Hey Jeff. Jeff said to me when he was talking to us, actually.
He has a face for
about
radio.
Bertu, he does. Yeah. Remember his whiskey, Bertu, right? Which, his brandy. His brandy, Bertu. We're talking about whiskey, but his brandy, Bertu, he said, you know, a lot of people think of brandy as like an after dinner drink or you know, wintertime or those things. And he goes, I don't know why people try and pigeonhole spirits. He goes, go to any bar in New York City and I guarantee you that their summertime menus got brandy, got bourbon on it.
Like, yeah, for sure.
So we don't have to pigeonhole it. So what we'll do is we'll just make brighter drinks, right? We'll do sours. We'll do smashes. Highballs. We'll do highball. Oh, the highball.
Yeah.
I got, I let the secret out right now. I got the Toki highball machine.
Oh, you got the
rebranded as Jim Beam Rye, and I'm going to be making rye balls.
Yeah, man.
With the highball machine.
Very good.
Thanks, Rosser.
Yeah. Fucking awesome, man.
That's going to be rad.
Hey, you know, my favorite time of year to make cocktails is...
Is every time of year?
Every time of year. I mean, so I don't really, like, you know, I try to incorporate some of, like, the winter spices and, like, fall spices, you know, into things in the spring and summertime. Because, like, if you think about it, like, a lot of tiki drinks, they have, like, things like cinnamon and nutmeg and, like, all these things. And you think of those as more, like, tropical, like, warmer weather vibes, but they have like some heavy shit going on in them.
Yeah, and in our sort of culinary world, those are like very much more sort of warming spices for wintertime. But they come from places that are hot all the time.
And something else I've been really digging lately is like I've been like, obviously I work for a gin company, but I've been like really like getting into the idea of like whenever we have our menu flips, I'm always the guy who's like, you know what, I'm gonna take the vodka drink. Because like I've had a lot of, I think we talked on the show last week with the kids from Vermont about like CBD and cocktails. I actually did like a dirty vodka martini variation with CBD. Wait, if the SLA is listening,
this was a home experiment.
It was a home experiment. But I think today we're going to talk about some vodka, right?
We are talking about vodka. We're talking about vodka. We're talking about Iceland. We're talking about. I don't know. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. We've got a great guest in the studio with us, Trevor Schneider from Reykjavik Vodka. Hey, buddy.
Hello.
Welcome.
Welcome to the studio.
Thank you guys very much.
You are
great to have you here.
Looking smart and dapper as you always do.
Thank you, sir.
How long have you been wearing that hair that way?
Oh, my God.
I don't think I can't remember a time when you didn't.
Yeah, so it's more than a decade, that's for sure.
Yeah. Jill DeGroff did a painting of you.
She did?
At least 8 years ago.
Something like that.
And in that, your hair is the same way.
Yeah, it's...
Trevor wears a hair. What do you call this?
It's a top knot. It's a man bun. It's, you know, whatever else.
Samurai.
You know? Yeah, exactly. It's a product of working in the hospitality industry and obviously having long hair and not being able to have your hair in said products that you're serving.
Didn't right? Never stop Damon. So,
yeah, long hair don't care.
Long hair don't care. But,
it's on all your knuckles.
Yeah. My father had a big beard and long hair, but now he's bald. So I figured the beard. And
ride it
and
while
the
you
hair.
Can.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. Let's put it that way.
Good man. Well, yeah. It's also, you know, I think the three of us, in fact, all three have kind of a signature thing, right? You're definitely the hair. Damon has both the hair and the beard, and then topping it off with a cowboy hat, and then I've got these dumbass red glasses.
People
recognize me, and I'm sure recognize you guys from those things alone.
For sure.
And it, you know, it means something to have something that's static and that people can rely on, even though I've definitely got pictures of Damon when he had short hair and no beard.
Well, actually, Jill DeGroff did a painting of me from like maybe like 10 years ago or so, but I did not have a long beard and long hair, but
just the hat.
The hat was
there. I remember the hat.
Yeah.
The hat is always there.
Yeah.
And she kind of nailed it, man. She's a lovely human being and
yeah.
a great, great friend of ours.
All of us. Yeah. I love her.
Yeah. She's the best.
Yeah. Well, I got to hang out with her a couple weeks ago down at Francis Schott's place, on the 25th of February. So what is your title? I don't know what your title is.
So,
I mean, I know, but I want the audience to know.
Well, right. So, I mean, it's a larger than a life title as far as I'm concerned, but simply put, I'm the national ambassador for Reykjavodka here in the U.S.
That's national ambassador.
Yeah. It's a bigger title than what's, you know.
But that holds true. I feel like half the time I see you, it's not here. And you don't even live here.
I don't. I
so
no
seeing
longer.
You here right now is different.
It is. I no longer live in New York. I was here for a long time, about 15 years. And now I reside in Charlotte, North Carolina.
North Kakalaki.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I've heard.
Did you live there before?
I lived in Durham.
You live in Durham. Okay, yeah.
Close. Just down the road.
Yeah, yeah. Everything in the Carolinas is just down the road.
I would say that Charlotte's like the city that I've been to the most that I've never been to because like I've connected through that airport
layovers,
a billion
yeah.
times. I've slept a lot in those rocking chairs in the airport, and I've never actually hung out in Charlotte.
And there's that tequila bar in there that's got like literally thousands of tequilas
yeah.
in an airport bar. It's amazing.
Yeah,
I don't know the name of it, so I'm sorry I can't plug
there,
you guys, but it's I great. I go there when I'm there. Sit in those rocking chairs and yeah. get a couple of tequilas while I'm waiting on my connecting.
It is a great airport.
So what took you down there?
So a combination of things, right? For starters, cost of living, quality of life, change of pace. As I said, I was here for 15 years, and I'm originally from Jersey. I love it here. It just turned into a place that was more better for me to visit than it was for me to live, based on those previous three things that I mentioned.
I mean, for the past couple of years, have been really... I love it. I fucking love New York.
Yeah.
But man, for the past few years, I've been thinking to myself, what is the best thing about living in New York? And the answer that I keep coming back to is, the best thing about living in New York is being able to look at someone who doesn't live in New York and say to them, yeah, but I live in New York.
That's so true.
Because I think to myself, man, how often do I get to a Broadway show or a Yankees game or anything happening at Madison Square Garden? And it's few and far between.
Yeah.
But then I have friends come visit for a week and they do all those things in a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe if I didn't live here, I'd do more here.
I've lived here for
it's weird.
13 years, and I've never been to the Statue of Liberty.
You heard it here first.
You know? Yeah. You know, but, I mean, I've been on a boat, like, on
it passed by it.
It passed by
the
it.
The ferry.
Like, right.
I mean, like, you know.
Ferry or some, you know, weird boat cruise that some brand took you on.
I also have, like, issues with commitment. So, like, I feel like the Statue of Liberty is, like, my girlfriend, and, like, that I just can't, like, get too like attached to, you know.
I'm starting to feel that way
and
myself.
I can see her from everywhere. She's always stalking.
She's always there. She's always there.
But the I get that. So like, because I just recently moved about like 6-7 months ago, moved out to California like part-time, so I'm doing the back and forth thing. It's like whenever I get stressed out in Brooklyn or in New York City in general, I go out to California.
Yep.
Where it's super chill, and then yep. when I get bored there, I come back to New York, you know.
Very true.
That's another old adage, right? The thing, live in New York, but leave before it makes you hard. Live in San Francisco, but leave before it makes you soft.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're splitting the time and kind of creating, you're taking uppers and downers at the same time.
Exactly. I've been doing that for a while, I think.
Yeah.
But, so like you moved down to North Carolina, how long ago was it?
It was August of last year, so I've been there just over a year now.
So... based on what we were saying before, also with like the airport being like a major like connection hub, it must be really easy for you to do like the national brand ambassador work because of the fact that it's right there, right?
It is. And that was kind of on my list. It wasn't in the top three, but being able to connect and being able to, you know, kind of get in and out of all the cities, that airport is very conducive to that. So I do fly American Airlines, which is one of the hubs that's
right.
down there. So, you know, getting to Florida and getting to Texas and getting to the West Coast, whether it be Seattle, Portland, you know, San Francisco or LA, it's all almost, they're always direct flights and there's always a plenty throughout the day. That, as you very well know, traveling in our line of work, that's a big selling point, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
That level of convenience from here. I mean, I lived in Brooklyn the majority of the years that I was here, and it was, you know, it was kind of, in a lot of cases, always a coin flip, right? Am I going to do LaGuardia or am I really going to battle JFK? Oof. It was never really Newark, but, you know, I ended up defaulting on LaGuardia because it was a smaller airport and there were less planes, but all of the connections, as you said earlier, yeah. were through Charlotte in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So taxing when we are honestly looking for whatever is going to be the path of least resistance, because then we get on the ground and we do all the work that it is that we do, which I'm not quite sure exactly what that is, but I do know it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's always a lot. It's tons.
Yes. What were you doing before you took on this role?
That's a great question.
That's why I asked it.
So, so I was doing kind of similar things. I was working locally with a different company here in a kind of flex ambassador, flex sales, flex bartender role, locally here just in Manhattan. And I did that part-time, and then I was just kind of either, you know, working in bars or help managing bars or curating menus and doing the consulting thing in a loose way. But a diehard hospitality guy. You know,
lifer, you doing it all your life?
So I would say before high school substitute was essentially how I was employed before I fell into the, you know, the bartender world. But I moved to New York to pursue a career in entertainment or acting. And obviously with acting, then comes the hospitality world. And I had a friend who worked the door, and then I went in to see him one day, and the manager was like, do you bartend? And I said, I barely know how to pour a glass of wine. Which I still think that's a pretty good joke, although it doesn't always get the laughs. But, you know, obviously there's a proper way to pour a glass of wine, which I learned in many years of experience. And then that was kind of it, right? Pursuing the acting and trying to make some money and have fun and create an identity. And then, you know, I was bartending at night. And then what ended up happening, I got seduced by the stick. And the stick just really started giving me back, you know, kind of what I was yearning for in pursuing acting, which was not only friends and community, but obviously money and learning and growth
and creativity
and a stage to perform.
And some pretty instant gratification, some applause, if you will.
Yes, 100%. And, you know, when you're going and auditioning and you're kind of just like, you know, don't call us, we'll call you after a while, the person that I am. Which is a huge energy person, that stuff weighs on you. And to your point, so the instant gratification was something that obviously in some ways people would say, you know, you get hooked and it becomes a part of you. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And then, like you said, the creativity, right? Creating drinks, creating an experience with guests that in a lot of ways don't live here. That are here for work or they're here visiting. And I really got enamored with that and really enjoyed that thoroughly. And then, you know, like I said before, you know, kind of being a life to serve, right? Whatever that means. And I've rolled that into this role, which is the ambassador role, which is in a lot of ways, we wear a lot of hats and you're constantly still providing hospitality. But now all of a sudden the locations are always changing. The people are always changing. All of that stuff now is making you stay sharper and stay on top of things. And obviously diversity and the country and outside of the country, all of it, it just continues to get better and better and better.
Absolutely.
I love it.
I think there's a huge, you know, the something you didn't mention like so much is that, like, throughout this creativity and like the stage and everything, there's like just like passion, like when you meet like
drive you something think, that drives you,
and like I feel like the, you know, like being in this industry, like I got personally, like I got so like just enthralled and like just like history and like the process and like the creativity and thing, but like I've kind of stayed because of like all the people that I've like met and like just like that share the same passion, you know. It's like whenever, like when you're acting, because I was acting for a while,
sure,
back in the day when I was a youngin, you know. But I kind of like fell into that in kind of the same way that you're saying that you fell into like bartending because of the thing, like and all the connections. And I just, like, I stayed in it because of the fact that I was just, like, I just love being around these people and, like, learning.
It's an infectious energy.
Yeah.
And there's always something to learn, always.
Oh, yeah, there's, absolutely. I mean, the learning never stops, right? The reality is that as much as I think, in a lot of ways, I'd like to think that I know a ton, which I do, there's a ton out there that I do not know. And sure. I'm always very, very captivated to meet people like yourselves and all of our friends out there that are constantly having that drive and that passion to educate people on whatever, right? Yeah. You know, whether Absolutely. It's the new tool, the new spirit, the new technique, sure. you know, it doesn't matter. You know, we're all in. And I think to your point, you know, staying... being enamored with that is something that we all share and it's yeah. geeky in some senses, but it's created a lot of my identity.
Yeah. We're all in love, sure. you know, like yeah. that's it. And yeah. like, actually what we need to talk about when we come back from this break is, I went on the spirit of education.
yes.
Let's talk about vodka, man. Cause yeah. like we don't get to talk too much
Pretty
on
rare.
The show about vodka. So there's a lot of stuff that I feel like we need to like discuss.
We need to discuss and learn.
All right, so right we'll here. Be back just in a few moments after we hear from our sponsors, and we'll continue talking in just a moment after we hear from Bernie Lopers.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Sari Kamen.
And I'm Leah Kurtz. And together we host Food Without Borders here on HRN.
Immigrants make our food system vibrant, diverse, and delicious.
Each week, we invite a guest to talk about how food connects them to their past as we explore what it's like to be an immigrant in the U.S. today.
You can find Food Without Borders wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. We're hanging out talking about some vodka today. Also, like, the first half of the show was just that's so fun. I mean,
the first half is always the good part to me. I feel like the first half.
We're heading into the bad part. Is that what you're saying?
I just feel like the first part is like, hey, let's get to know each other. Even though most of the time it's people we either know or know of, but we are facilitating our listener to get to know our guest, right?
Absolutely.
And it's like I learn like, a lot about people. You know, totally. I think I know someone, and then they tell me something, and I'm like, holy shit, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, like, the reason why like I started
Or sometimes, holy shit, that's horrifying.
When I started this show, like, 8, 9 years ago, yeah, whenever the hell it was.
Pushing nine.
Been a while. I was just like, all right, we're just talking shop. This is the conversation we've always had late night at the bar, mm-hmm, but we just happen to be here in the middle of the day with microphones
mic'd
in front
up.
Of us. And, you know, like Souther said, there's four people listening.
but I think we've gone up to six. We've doubled. We've almost doubled.
I think we're in the double digits now.
Yes.
Anyway, so like we're talking about Rick Avaca and...
with our good friend Trevor Schneider.
Absolutely. And well, let's try some real quick.
Yes.
Cheers.
So cheers.
We got plastic cups today. No clinking sounds on the radio.
So obviously, well, to me... it's obvious that Reykjavik vodka is like, it's kind of like the vodka. There's like a few vodkas that are in all the cocktail bars, and this is one of them.
Yeah.
You know, and I was just wondering, like, we could talk about like a billion, there's a billion things to talk about, like in, as far as the realm of like vodka and cocktails goes. But like, I've always been very curious about this brand because like, I mean, I carry it, but I'm wondering, like, how it became such, it has its, like, foothold in all these cocktail bars, you know? Like, Tito's.
Well, I think
Absolute Licks and Rika. They're the ones you see in every.
I think the question that I have is similar to what you're trying to ask here, which is.
Which I don't even know what the fuck I'm trying to ask, actually.
Well, I feel like there's an abundance, an abundance of vodkas available, like just a metric shit ton, right? How come you're right? Those three that you just named are the ones that you see when you go to an actual craft cocktail bar. What is it that makes your vodka say to a craft bartender, if I'm going to carry one, I'm going to carry this one?
So I think, you know, it's a great question, and you know there's a large array of responses, I think, but I'll try to field it as best that I can. I think to your first point, I think that Reka is one of those vodkas in the behemoth of a category, as you said, Souther, that tons and tons and tons of opportunity options. Vodka has great stories, right? You know, where your water comes from, what you're filtering through, what's the still. You know, we can talk about all those things from a science-y, geeky, you know, standpoint as I push my glasses up on my face.
We're all nerds.
Yeah, 100%. So I think that Reka brings something that's very unique. Obviously, in vodka, more than 60%, and not just Reka, but it's the water source that you use. So we have arguably some of the purest water in the world.
I've been to Iceland. The water there is crazy.
It's unbelievable,
like,
right?
It's ridiculously delicious.
Yeah.
It's like even at just a restaurant or whatever, and they pour you water, you're like, whoa.
It's one of those things where I completely agree, but it's wherever you go to have whatever that local thing is, it's so much better to enjoy it there.
Sure.
Right? Like rosé in the south of France, and you know,
or rosé at Bacchanal in Orleans.
That's a spiritual thing that has happened down there in Bacchanal.
Absolutely. It's like drinking chartreuse in like southern France, or like, you know, having
So with that being said, you know, our water, the glacial water, it really is incredible. But then, you know, we have a thing that we say it's made of Iceland, right? And the large component is that obviously it's the water, but then we use the lava rock as our filtration mechanism, and our still is powered by geothermal energy. So we truly are made of Iceland in that respect. And we use a very unique still, which is a Carter Head still, which originally is made to produce gin. As you very well know, we use it in our Hendrix process as well. We selected this because, Iceland has a charmingly offbeat sense of humor, and we figured we'd make vodka with a still that was made to produce gin. So I think that is a little bit about Reka. And then kind of to go again to answer why it's one of the three, or when you see the cocktail hold. I think that, you know, my predecessor was in the cocktail world. And so a little bit of that has certainly been an influence. I would say that our, you know, like our community, right? I leaded towards or lended towards the mixology, or at least the bartender, the hospitality kind of people. So making those relationships is definitely something that, as we all know, is paramount in terms of whatever, right? Whether it be a spirit, whether it be, you know, a program, a party, whatever it is that you're doing. So I think I feel very fortunate, speaking on behalf of Reka, to have that level of impact on you guys and a lot of people, obviously, out there, the listeners, that see the brand as being absolutely darling for what it is, and getting the love and the support that we get.
I love this vodka.
Thank you.
I guess, like, what gets me sometimes, and this is not like a gotcha moment, I'm not trying to like do anything like that, but like I'm kind of interested by the fact that, like, what you just said, which I think is a very lovely sentiment, like the fact that, like, you kind of like focused on the craft cocktail bars and craft spirits places. Like, why is this different in the way, like, another friend of ours, friend of the show, Simon Ford, was on like a month ago or
love
so.
Love Simon.
Love him to death.
Love Simon.
And we were talking about the 86 company and like the Ellsbury Duck, and like how they're basically like reformatting the program for the distillery, where it's now going to be called, was the Forged Gin Company.
Forged Gin Company, yeah.
Yeah, it's not the 86 company anymore. So they're like stripping back on the other spirits they have in their thing. But the thing is, like, they were focused so hard on being kind of the same thing.
Very mixology forward, or bartender forward, and being that brand, right? Being that portfolio. And
do you think it's because they spread themselves a little too thin, maybe, or something like that? Because, like, obviously, Rick is, like, its own thing. That's and it. That's just what you do.
That's it.
There's no any like, there's no like flavored variations or anything like that. Right?
No, so and like, there's no plan to do any of those things. I think that
that's very refreshing to know.
Huge,
yeah, right?
Huge, and that's been something that's been since my first day 4.5 years ago, because that was one of my questions coming in, obviously being a little skeptical as to the category as a whole and saying, well, where are we going, right? And one of the things that I was very in love with was the science of Reka. And I think that in a lot of ways, obviously all brands have stories, and you know, that's where in a lot of ways we lean towards more of one than the other. I think the story that you were saying Simon had and all of his partners for creating 86 was very much like creating something for
also,
us.
Also, just for the record, we're not saying that like one's better than the other.
No, right.
We're
obviously
this is more about like the
this is
the conversation of the actual like production and like the business, you know.
Yep. Right. So again, if I could speculate, Simon, you know, the reality is that Ford's was very Ford's was the brand, right?
From the get-go, for sure.
Right from day one.
For, like Ford's and like I feel like Cabeza, like, and then like they were like, all right, they had this really like big idea, mm-hmm. which is beautiful.
Yeah.
And like actually we have some of the like crazy reserve cabeza back here if you want to try some.
Yeah.
But like it's like I don't know, there's like I was talking with Tito back in the day, like this is like maybe a decade ago.
Yeah.
I was down there outside of Austin, you know, like if you go past the airport where his like original distillery was, and like we're like shooting guns and like riding dirt bikes and drinking like vodka right at the still and stuff. And he's like, dude, what do you think about me like doing like, he's like, the brand's blowing up and all this stuff. And he was like, what do you think about me doing flavored vodkas? And I was like, don't fucking do that. If you're going to do anything, like play up the fucking Texas game. Like, because a lot of people find that to be like appealing. And I was like, if you're going to do anything, do a 100 proof, do a black label 100 proof Tito's, and that's it. You know, you're not even changing the fucking distillate. You're just like making it more
Pope.
Badass, you know, and like,
sure.
And he was like, all right, I'm going to take the consideration. He never did it, but,
yeah. But the thing is like, flavor, right?
But he's like Tito's has always stayed with the thing that they do. It's the thing I like about Maker's Mark too. It's like, it's always been like, I mean, outside of 46, like Maker's Mark, you know, they've always been doing the same thing. And like, it's something like kind of like steadfast and true and like something that's reliable, you know?
Yep. And consistent, right?
Consistent.
And that was that was some of the root of why I originally asked whether they were going to do flavors. And in a big way, right, it obviously falls under the William Grant portfolio. So it's our vodka play, right? It becomes, you know, somebody else walks in and maybe talks about the whiskey or Hendrix or, you know, one of the other brands in the portfolio. And then, you know, a lot of people, as you guys know, a lot of people drink vodka. So it's like, well, do you guys have a vodka?
A lot of people drink vodka.
Tons.
You heard it here first from Trevor Schneider. Apparently,
you can quote me.
Apparently, a lot of people drink vodka.
Tons, tons and tons. But, you know, it's one of those things that I think... There is a relatable story with Reka. I think that our employees at William Grant & Sons, our commercial team, our marketing team, everybody is very much, they're in love with the brand, and that's infectious, right? And that then spreads.
Yeah.
And for me, right, I take a lot of pride, and I'm very proud to have been on the brand for as long as I have. And, you know, I think that in our business, that consistency that you were talking about is something that is paramount. And it does change, you know, it changes people's perspectives.
It does. And that's speaking of that, that is a long time. 4.5 years as a brand ambassador is a long run.
It's so I guess
it's a job that burns people.
And I'm doing air quotes, but I guess the it's 3 to 5 years usually.
Okay, so you're pushing towards the
end. So I'm getting there, right? But it's I love it. I think it's great. I think, you know, it requires a tremendous amount of it's very demanding in ways that I think that we never would have thought of in the beginning. And, you know, initially after I left bartending in, you know, New York, it was kind of that situation of like, have I made the mistake?
But also, you started this job in New York.
100%.
And the thing is, like, the thing about living and working in New York is, like, you have to have thick motherfucking skin. Like,
huge.
You know? And so, like, that, like, really, like, sets you up for any place that you move to, say Charlotte, say, like, San Francisco, anywhere.
100%.
Like, you come here, you work your ass off. People always ask me all the time, they're like, how do you do, like, a radio show, own a bar, brand ambassador, like, do cocktail writing, like, all this stuff? I'm like, it's fucking New York City. We're all doing the same hustle. Shit. Like we're the hustling. Hustle. The hustle is real. So like, but then you take that with you, like now
everywhere you
like,
go. Yeah.
Let's talk about. I would love to talk about. Man, there's so many things I want to talk about. Like we don't get to talk to people in the vodka world very often. So like, I'm really excited to talk about this. Like for something so simple as a distillate, it's a very complex conversation. There's a lot to talk about.
Everybody's got something to say always. Oh, about vodka, always. Yeah. Like you were saying, only a few people drink it.
I've been known to say a few things.
I've never heard this from
about me. Everything.
But like, so the like when you're out there in the field and you're in a lot of cocktail bars. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're in a lot of bars, you know, because like that vodka is a very popular spirit, obviously. But like, whenever you go to do like staff trainings or like menu development, like what's your take? Like, how do you like approach that? Like, as far as like,
how do you approach it and how well are you received? Like,
yeah, because to me, like I said before at the top of the show, like I love like going in like every season and being like, I'm taking the vodka drink because what I want to do, it's like, you got to showcase the spirit, but at the same time, you got to make it like, you got to throw in like certain curveballs to like make it like, you know, because like essentially, you know, it's like the most pure like distillate of a grain or a grape. It's the most pure distillate, you know? So like there, it has like the product that you worked on to distill, you want that purity. So you don't want to muddy up the cocktail too much with a bunch of other ingredients, but you still want to make it interesting and like kind of like showcase it. So like to me, like that's where I get excited. Like back in the day, like 15 years ago or whatever, like there was like kind of like a pushback on vodka, you know, in the cocktail community, because it was like it basically like it, the flavors are so delicate that it wasn't something that you could like play off of. Like if you did like a gin gimlet versus a vodka gimlet, you know, like you can still get the gin in the gimlet, but then like with the vodka, it kind of like it gets overpowered by the sugar and the lime, right? So like to me, like I find it as, and we don't call ourselves this, but like in the mixology community, like I'm always like intrigued by doing the vodka cocktail to, it challenges me. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, like even in like a Moscow Mule, I feel like the ginger is like, you got to like be careful with it, because you still want to like get to the base of like what the spirit is and like understand it and be able to taste it. And like certain ingredients, like if it's too citrus heavy, then like it might like ruin the mouthfeel from like the actual like cleanliness of like the vodka itself. You know what I mean? Like,
I get you, man.
So like that's, I mean, that's why like to me, like
I'll go back on two quotes. One is from somebody else and one's from me. Ueda-san,
come see me at my bar, tell me I sent you.
That's my quote, yes. Ueda-san said vodka is a celebration of the mixer.
Yeah.
And I've always said for me, food is the mixer for vodka.
Yeah.
Like I like just frosty cold, undiluted, chilled vodka with oysters, with raw seafood, a seafood platter.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about that yet.
With like, foie gras, with a bag of salt and vinegar potato chips. Like there's kind of nothing better. Right. Yeah. So let's let Trevor get in there and tell us.
Yeah, so you know, I think the first question that you had, which was how do, you know, you approach it in terms of staff trainings and you know, just kind of getting bartenders involved with cocktail creation. I'm very similar to you. Because I was around when vodka was not the thing, right? Yeah. In our world, in our community. Whatever. My mother was a vodka drinker. I always liked vodka. I wasn't a number one fan for it back in the day, but I always appreciated it being, you know, a tool in the, you know, proverbial shed to then go out there and task people for happiness. So one of the things that I like to try and encourage with creation, or, you know, like you said, you pick the vodka cocktail for a menu, is that it's a blank canvas in some ways, and it's time for you to then showcase the spirit and not muddy it up, like you said, and have the ability to then paint this picture or take the customer on this journey with the other ingredients. To your point, Souther, about, you know, it being, you know, the complement to making or celebrating the mixer, right? I think that in a big way, in this country, vodka has had a lot of history since the 50s, and not to take anything away from gin, because gin was the hero before, and then obviously trends change, and there's a bunch of reasons. We can sit here and talk about all the reasons as to why. I will just say like two things, right? Obviously the Moscow Mule, which you said, which was orchestrated by specific vodka here in the US, and then obviously James Bond, you know? No. So with James Bond, and lastly, I'll close it out with, the, you know, one of the later ones was obviously Sex and the City and the Cosmopolitan. So it's always been a kind of a category that is then influenced by outside sources. And in some cases in our community, it was kind of, you know, not really so well received. And I pride myself in, you know, relishing in all of that, right? I love distilled gin drinks because they're great drinks. And in most cases, I would prefer the gin drink over the vodka drink, but it does make a great drink that then will maybe get somebody to taste gin, which I like. So it becomes that segue kind of a thing where, oh, this is a Southside with vodka. You should try a Southside with gin because that's what it was originally made with. And, you know, there's a bunch of drinks that are like that, from the martini and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I feel like there's, you know, like, I think we touched on it earlier in the show about like the situational drinking and dining, you know, like if you're having, and you'd mentioned food and like the pairing, like if you do, what's up? we got some spectators here at the station. If you're having like a bunch of like eccentric, like caviar, you know, or, you know, like,
that's what this, like, was built for.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like 100%. Pickles or like pickled fish.
Or let's even go, you know, to Iceland if you're eating, yeah, you know, that fermented shark.
Yeah, for sure.
And which we did I was in Iceland. Me and Max went over there a couple years ago. And yeah, like, it's the brisk air. It's the crispness of the, yeah, you know, the place. And
so clean.
This is the kind of thing that you, like, it's terroir driven, like wine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also, you know what? I've realized, like, as I get older, and I'm fucking old as hell now, and I'm just waiting for my hair to turn white so I can be like Gandalf. But like, that's all I want, man. Like, I want to be like a Leon Russell, like Gandalf sort of dude. I'm working on it. But like, the thing is, like, you know how much, like, when I was younger, I used to drink so much red wine, and then I started drinking like really light white wines just because I like the really delicate nature of them.
Sure.
And it's like, they're like, it's, everything's a think piece, right? You're like, it's something to like ponder on. But like, I really like super, super delicate white wines these days. And like, also, at the same time, I started going back to like drinking like vodka.
Yeah.
But like, chilled ass vodka. And maybe it's because I've been eating a lot of caviar lately. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying.
Just, you know, we live like millionaires.
Yeah.
I had dinner at La Bernadette Inn a couple weeks ago. It's amazing.
We make no money, but we're trying to live like millionaires. But I love it in like the way that it's just like the situational, like occasional, like vibes, you know, like where like I own an oyster bar. I don't eat oysters every day, but you know what? Like, I fucking chilled vodka with some oysters. Like, it's like
perfect.
Everything's just crisp and clean and cold, you know. It's like,
I love that. You know, you go to a lot of places in New York, they have the seafood towers, and they have like an upcharge to get like four shots of chilled vodka on top,
like in the ice,
in the,
like,
ice on the top. Yeah, yeah, perfect. Yeah. Like, I love that. It's so, makes so much sense to me.
Yeah,
it's the best.
I'm like, how are you enjoying the gig? You love it, right?
So,
he's
going round two. I love the job, right? It certainly has evolved for me in the 4.5 years that I've been in the position. And I think that it's with age, right? It's like being behind the bar. You realize what's demanded of and how you better help the team. It's not just, you know, it's never about me. I know that this is the only brand, but, you know, I will accept on behalf of a lot. There's a lot of people behind this that really are out there pounding the pavement as much as I am, if not more. So, you know, it is challenging, and getting older, to your point as well. And I love the Gandalf. I'm all for it, man.
Well, you got some white in your beard,
I definitely do, man. And it seems like it's multiplying by the day, and I'm not opposed to it. Let's put it this way. I have more gray hair than my father. I won't ask him to show why or how, but that's a whole nother.
But did he live in New York before?
He didn't.
That's the difference.
He didn't.
That's why you have it.
Well, they were opposed to it as well, but that's a whole different podcast, essentially. But no, so yeah, the gig is great. It is evolving and changing and definitely puts a strain, as we all know, on personal life, no different than working in hospitality does, period. So imagine that, you know, and then obviously traveling close to 200 days a year. That's a lot, you know, and it's demanding not only on, you know, a person, but on a family and on friends and all those things. But I love this, and we made a reference to the timing of it, and I am towards the end of it, but I would like to think that I have a tremendous amount of energy, and I'm still very much present and very much then, you know, in the hunt, and the passion is still very much there. So I'm just trying to figure out how that all continues to work so that I'm delivering the performance that I should be as the lead person for Reka. And then, you know, obviously keeping it new and creative and keeping it up with our community, which in a lot of ways, you know, as much as we are all spread out, a lot of us are the same. So, you know, keeping that new and keeping that interesting is, I think, is something that I am constantly always forward thinking and trying to make it, you know, fun. If I hear Leo like tell me about like, hey man, you just can't keep flying around the United States and doing the same things, man. People are going to get bored. And I was like, you know what? At first I was like, man, shut up. And then I was like, you raise a really valid point.
I disagree. You're not in front of the same audience every time. It's a new group, you know, every single day. Every single day, there's a lot of people turning 21.
I'm right.
So you got a new audience every single day.
And I say to my wife, right, like the reality is that I'm more comfortable around people that I don't know most of the time, because I'm more in rooms where you don't know all the people than usually, and I'm working on it, but then the people that I actually do know.
Yeah.
And that know me. And that's something that you get, you know, like throughout spending time. It's no different than getting behind the bar, especially here in New York. You have a whole different, you may have regular customers, but the reality is that in most places you work, you have a whole new different audience every shift and maybe a couple times throughout the shift, depending on where you work, which, you know, I was always very happy and very excited to be a part of. Yeah. It works with my attention span as well.
I think that's how it works for a lot of us.
Hey, you know, I was just thinking that, like, man, we've been sitting here for like almost an hour, and dang, I feel like we need to. You got to come back, man.
Yeah,
please come back to
Let's
the show.
Let's do it.
Like,
yeah,
we would love to have you back.
I'm in.
Really fun talking with you about everything. Like, the thing is, and I want to say this to like our listeners out there. It's like, it is a vodka that you will find at like all your favorite cocktail bars, and you should definitely try it. And, you know, in its pure form and tried in cocktails, it's great. It's great stuff. And hopefully you get to run into some of these people at those bars and get to talk with them in person about it. My favorite thing about doing this show is getting to learn, you know, like we've talked about this before, obviously, Souther, you and I, and a lot of us have, you know, like we can never know it all. And if we were in a business where we could know it all, we'd be fucking bored as shit.
We'd be in the wrong business.
So we'd be in the wrong business, right?
Yeah.
So like having guests like you on the show today is like it's a real pleasure, and it's very exciting, and it's inspiring, honestly.
Yeah, man.
You know, like being able to learn and continue to just meet and hang out with awesome people
plus, you know, you definitely bring a lot of great energy to the room.
Thank you.
Any room I've ever seen you in, by the way, which is a lot. I see you all over the place.
Thank you.
You know, when we travel, we go to the same conferences, et cetera, and I always see you hanging around doing something.
Doing it.
Trevor, really great to have you on the show talking about Reka Vodka. Do you guys got an Instagram or anything like that?
Well, yes, we have. So Reka Vodka is our Instagram. And then my Instagram, selfishly, humble plug, is Cocktail Ninja.
Cocktail Ninja.
Yeah.
On Instagram, and Reka Vodka, which is R-E-Y-K-A, on Instagram, can be found as well.
Yes,
look forward at your favorite cocktail bar and at your favorite retail store. And really, man, thanks again for being on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
before we shut it down one more time, I'm going to continue to keep plugging away for Chris Reed, our buddy over at Bargoto, who was diagnosed about a year ago with ALS, and soon to the disease is soon to rob him of his ability to do his job, and he's going to need some funding. We got a GoFundMe set up. Raising money for Chris Reed at Bargoto. You can find it on the GoFundMe page. Also, take a look at the Speakeasy podcast, Instagram and Twitter, and I'll post the links on there as well. But you know, we're trying to take care of one of our own, so if you got even a dollar, donate to Chris. He'll be very happy to get that from you.
Thank Absolutely. You. And you know, just go. Also, outside of that, just go by and see him.
Yeah. Oh man, he loves that.
Yeah.
We all love that. But you know, his time is running short, so he's wanting to squeeze in as many visits and hugs as he can.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for the Speakeasy this week.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun. Thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for bringing your awesome product.
Thank you.
And until next week, we'll see you then. And before we sign off, go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the Beating Heart to donate to the stations so we can actually continue to do this show and many others like this one. But until next week, cheers, y'all.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers. So you don't shun the devil
with your rock and roll. Want more of the Speakeasy? Follow us and ask questions on Instagram at Speakeasy Podcast or on Twitter at Speakeasy Radio. You can find Damon at Damon Bolte, and you can find me at Creative Drunk on all platforms. Take a moment to write us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform and give us a star rating, 5 if possible. If you're visiting New York City or a resident, stop by the studio and hang out with us during an episode. Reach out beforehand to make sure we'll be here. We'd love to see you. And please support our show by visiting heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the Beating Heart to donate.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.